so many halacha lemaisa sugyas that come out. I'm sure in each year, respectively, you've learned so much about many different things. Towards the end of the Masechta, the halachot of Machali Akum come up. These are very, very, very relevant topics of discussion. As simple as relevant as going to the store and buying a milk product that has an OUD on it. So where does that come from? What are the origins of that? What does that mean? What significance does that have? So it's just very, very important for us to just be a little more aware of what's going on and the behind the scenes. First of all, the background from the Gemaras in the end of the Masechta. And even more than that, the behind the scenes in the actual milk factories and milk product factories. We have a very, very big privilege of hearing from Rabbi Gordimer. Gordimer works for the OU. He's the head of the dairy department in the OU. I'm sorry if I didn't give... That's not the right title, but...
More than the title.
Okay. He's responsible for a lot of the... inspection that the OU does in the various factories throughout the country. So without further ado, please give your attention to Rabbi Gordimer. Thank you so much for spending the day with us.
Thank you, Rabbi Cohen. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you, Rabbi Schnall, for inviting all of you for inviting and attending. I'm going to focus basically on milk per se, not on other things, cheese, butter, and so forth. I'd be happy to if I'm supposed to, but I wasn't. I think I should focus on milk, and maybe in the future we can do it again for cheese or butter, or whatever it is. Either way, just to start, just the very, very basics. Not going into the. It's not a Gemara shir. The very basics. The Gemara of Avodah Zarah and Daf Lamed Hey and Daf Lamed Tes mentions twice the halacha of milk. The Gemara says it's the Mishnah. It says Il Devarim is on Lamed Hey on the base. We don't have to go even look at it inside. Whatever you want. Just take 10 seconds. Il devarim shalobde kachavim asurin. These things are Gentiles. These foods are prohibited. They need surin isur hanoah, but they're not prohibited in benefit. Just can't eat them. But you're allowed to sell them. Whatever. There's no you can benefit from. You can't eat them. Chalav shachalvo obed kachavim ve'en yisrael rehu. If a non-Jew milked from a cow and there wasn't a Jew watching it to supervise the milking, that's a problem. That milk is called chalav akum, chalav of non-Jews, and that's prohibited. And the Gemara continues, the Gemara right here, right after the Mishnah, says that it's prohibited not because if you buy a container of milk, of cow milk, maybe it's camel milk or pig milk from a non-kosher animal. That's not a concern, because the milk from different animals has a different appearance. If you go to farms, go to dairies, you'll see, it's all cow milk normally, but if you go to exotic animal farms, you'll see other types of milk can be green, they can be gray, they can be yellowish, different colors of milk. So speaking of being a kosher animal milk, cow, goat, and sheep milk, that's not going to be a problem. It's going to be white. The concern though is that maybe non-kosher milk will be added to the kosher milk in order to increase the volume. Maybe the Gentiles, they have some other milk in the farm from the horses, whatever it is, maybe they'll add it to the cow milk. And non-kosher animals is non-kosher. That's the Gemara's of the concern. So the concern is not that we're buying a container of camel milk, we're buying milk that's cow milk that has little non-kosher milk from horses or donkeys or whatever mixed into it. The Gemara then, actually the Mishnah, Lamed Tes, Amud Beis, 4 pages later, says, Ve'elu mutarim ba'achila, these things were mutar to permissible to consume, cholav shechalvo akum yisrael roehu, milk that was milked by a Gentile, by a non-Jew, and a Jew witnessed the milking. And the Gemara continues and says the Jew doesn't have to watch every second of the milking, as long as the Jew is present and he's able to stand up and take a look over the farm, and over the barn, whatever, and see the cows. The only cows are there, and there are no other things. That's good enough, because if there's a mashgiach there, then the farmers know no other animals are there. They're not be careful. They can't bring other animals around while the rabbi's here. So that's how the Gemara says. There was a famous machlokas, a famous dispute among poskim, among halakhic authorities, later halakhic authorities, as to what this prohibition of cholav akum, of Gentile, non-Jewish milk, what is this prohibition all about? How strict is this prohibition? One opinion, which is the opinion of the Pri Chadash, he's one of the great achronim, he wrote a lot in the Yoredei on kashrus issues and so forth, Pri Chadash held that milk is prohibited if we don't have good reason to know, to confirm, that it's from a kosher animal. In other words, let's say that the only animals in the whole area are cows, goat, and sheep, kosher animals. There are no non-kosher farms anywhere in an area that can remotely bring their milk here. Don't worry about it. Pri Chadash would say as well, he says that if non-kosher animal milk is extremely, exorbitantly expensive, and cow milk is cheap, is regular milk price, but non-kosher milk is very expensive, Don't worry that the non-Jewish farmers in the poor some camel milk, which is 100 times the price into the cow milk, to add it in. He's going to take a loss. He's not going to do that. Don't worry about it. That's the pre-chadash. He said, go by the normal circumstances, if there's any concern or not. No concern. You don't think they're concerned, don't worry about it. It seems clear there's no concern. These are the logistics. These are the facts. However, a majority of achronim, halachic authorities, say no, that milk has a unique prohibition. Milk in the times of Gemara. Today we're going to get to it in a few minutes. Milk has a unique prohibition that Chazal, that the sages gave it, which is, it's called a davar shebeminyan, something that was prohibited by a large group of Talmidei Chachamim, Bezin, Sanhedrin, and something like that. Even if the reason doesn't apply, you still can't violate it. And a person might say, I have to worry about any milk here being from pigs or whatever. There's no pigs around here. Nope. They said you can't have this. This is considered non-kosher. You can't change the halacha. Halacha doesn't change based upon the reasoning or the circumstances. So a majority of opinions say that milk, the issur on milk, the prohibition on milk, of non-supervised milk, is a davar sheb minyan, something that was prohibited by a minyan, by a certain significant group of Talmidei Chachamim, of Sanhedrin, whatever, and therefore we can't go ahead and say, well, the facts don't apply, to say, therefore I can go ahead and I can drink whatever milk without any supervision. That's the majority, that's the halacha, that's how it's accepted. Today, we see all the time, my organization, the OU, the OK, the HUFK, the STAR-K, what they call the STAR-D, all these agencies, they give hashgacha, they certify milk products that do not have a mashgiach tamidi there. Because according to the letter of the law, you'd think you have to have a mashgiach, there's a rabbi watching the milking at the farm for every single milking. But most products today, there aren't enough rabbis, there aren't enough to do such a thing. In America, there's so many billions upon billions. It's decreasing, but the amount of milk, the amount of kosher products made out of milk is so massive, there's no such thing as having enough mashgichim to cover it all. So how can all these dairy products be permissible? The answer is that there's a special interpretation, which is well accepted by not everybody, but many, called chalav stam, regular milk, regular domestic milk, which is that since... Here's how it works. So Moshe Feinstein, in the greatest posik of the previous generation, in his famous Igros Moshe, his famous set of tshuva of responses farim, where he answered questions on all types of practical halachic issues, he explained as follows. He said that according to the letter of the law, he felt that regular milk, without having mashgiach there, I'm talking about America, we'll get to other countries hopefully soon, is permissible because of the following. There's a halachic principle called anan sahadeh. We are witnesses. If there's a fact in life, something, an event that occurs, and we didn't witness it with our eyes, we don't have a mashgiach watching it, but we know it's true. Without a question, it's true. Then we say it's as if we're all witnessing that event. We don't have to visually witness it, but we're virtually witnessing it. And that's good enough. Different gemaras about different state cases like this. And therefore, due to the fact that we all know that milk factories today are respected by the government, the government doesn't allow milk of non-kosher animals to be intermingled with the kosher milk. It's cow milk. It's regular kosher domestic cow milk. We know that as a fact. The government enforces this strictly as the law. Therefore, it's like we're witnesses to the milking. We see ourselves virtually what's going on. Instead of having the mashgiach to the farm, we're all the mashgiachim. We're all, as if we're all at the farm, we're all in the dairy factories watching the milking going on. Because we all know that's the case, that all the milking done today, sold commercially, if you love the seal test milk, whatever it is, It's all kosher milk. We know it's coming from kosher animals because the government enforces these laws. So that's the idea of chalav stam, of regular milk, regular domestic milk. And that's why most called national kosher agencies, national kosher agencies, we certify this milk based upon this understanding that the milk, we know that there's no adulteration, no nothing non-kosher there. We know that the government's inspecting it, and that's fine. Now, it's interesting that Ramosha talks about, this is what I wanted to get into a little bit, but I'll get into a lot of things if I'm able to, but Ramosha discusses maybe it's true the government's inspecting most of the farms, inspecting the dairy factories. The dairy industry is very regulated. The dairy industry is regulated by the federal government, by the state government. Their inspectors go, not every day, but very heavily inspection of the dairy industry. It's very, if there's contamination, bacteria, it's very sensitive. That's the government is inspecting very heavily. To be a dairy, the regulations are crazy. So that's the key. So Ramosha understood that, obviously. He understood that. But there were, in the old days, the inspections, though, weren't as good as today, to be honest. For instance, Ramosha mentions that there are certain farms that would be, they supply milk to dairies, which means, factories that bottle the milk, they pasteurize, they bottle it, they make it into butter, into cheese, whatever it is. The motion mentioned that not all the farms were inspected so well. There are farms that were maybe remote, smaller farms. They weren't inspected so much by the government. The motion says, no, due to the fact that the prohibition of chalav akum, of non-kosher milk, non-Jewish milk, starts at the contact point between the non-Jew and the Jew, which means the factory or the company, the dairy company, and the consumer, it's fine. Even though beforehand, some of the farms, going back a step or two, the farms weren't necessarily all supervised by the government, not necessarily. It doesn't matter. We don't look at the previous point of contact. But the point of contact, when the Jewish consumer is buying the milk, he's buying it from the company or from the store, that's when the prohibition takes effect. It doesn't take effect back at the farm. So the farm wasn't inspected well. Okay, it's not a whatever. Not everyone necessarily agrees to the way that Moshe, his exact understanding of this, but that's what happened then. It was accepted. Today it's much better than that. Today the level of inspection is really so extreme. I'll just explain really how it is very, very minimally, very cursory. Every farm today is visited by the government, state government and or federal government. State government definitely, federal government I believe as well. And in order for a dairy, which means a plant, a factory, to get milk from a farm, that farm has to be an approved farm. So how do they do that? The farm just promise we're approved, don't worry, we're approved. No. Every farm, when they send a shipment of milk on a tanker, on a large hauler, large truck, and this truck might stop at 20 different farms, depending on the size, and pick up milk from here, this farm, that farm, that farm, and it gets to the factory with all the milk from all the farms. But every farm that it stops at has to provide a bar-coded flask which contains a sample of the milk from that farm. When that truck gets, the truck gets to the dairy factory, in the back, in the back area, there's going to be a little, it's like these labs, you go past sometimes these labs in Washington Heights, and they have little containers, like whatever it is, a little box, and a bunch of little samples, and that, testing things. So there would be a bunch of little flasks, bar-coded flasks, in the back of the tanker in a box. And as soon as the tanker arrives, it can't unload at the dairy factory until every single flask has been taken out, has been scanned for its barcode to make sure that it's from an approved farm, and has been tested for bacteria and other type of contaminants. So we actually verified an inspected farm all the way to the dairy. Not only that, but every single tanker today, every single truck today, that commercial hauler is inspected by the government in terms of what it's hauling, what it's carrying. So if the government's going to see it hauled milk from 20 farms and five of the farms weren't approved, they're going to be in big trouble. So the traceability, literally from the farm to the bottling, to the milk with ice cream, the butter, whatever it's going to be, is 100% traceable. It wasn't that way beforehand necessarily. It wasn't as high tech. They didn't have barcoding. So like when I was little, we didn't have this, sort of this type of stuff. And Moshe Sinai certainly didn't have any of this stuff. So it's much more verifiable today than it ever was before. That's that. So you would think, okay, we're clear, we're out of the woods. Everything you can verify is from a farm, inspected farm, and the farm is a cow farm, and we're good. There's one problem that came up very recently. It hasn't been written about too much, but I wanted to talk about it here a little bit. This is the issue that the government, the U.S. government, the FDA, in 2012, they started permitting milk from animals other than cow, goats, and sheep. You can go online, you'll see there are various camel milk farms, there's one in Pennsylvania, there are a few out west. You can get, in theory, horse milk. The government there's something called the Pasteurized Milk Ordinance, the PMO. It's an FDA, Federal Drug Administration regulation for dairies, for milk companies. And this is the modified version about what is milk. How do you define milk commercially? I'll just read this, hoping I might take a few seconds. Okay, hoofed mammals' milk, which is what milk is. Hoof mammals' milk is the normal lactose secretion, practically free of colostrum. Colostrum is the milk that comes out when the mother first gives birth, obtained by complete milking of one or more healthy hoofed mammals. Hoof mammals, for the purpose of this ordinance, include but are not limited to numbers of, it's a Latin word I don't want to mess up, such, and it mentions family bovidae, cattle, water, buffalo, sheep, goats, yaks, those are kosher, family camelidae, llamas, alpacas, camels, etc., and also family equidae, horses, donkeys. This product should be produced according to the sanitary standards of this ordinance. So today, in theory, there are in the milk supply, there might be milk from camels. The government authorizes it commercially now. Milk from horses, milk from donkeys. How does Moshe's opinion stand today? Maybe we can't verify the milk is coming from cows. The government allows milk from other animals as well. So I'll tell you the legality, and I'll tell you the practical thing. Legality is as follows. The same FDA document actually answers our question, because this is in section 4, paragraph 3, about labeling. It says the common name of the hoofed mammal producing the milk shall precede the name of the milk or milk product. In other words, you have to say, the bottle has to say camel milk, horse milk, goat milk, sheep milk, whatever milk. As an example, goat, sheep, water buffalo, or so forth, except for cow. Cow, when it says the word milk, it means by definition cow. Any other species has to appear on the label. And it's a violation not to. So therefore, and I talked to inspectors about this, which basically the bottom line is this, any milk that says, any dairy product that says milk is cow milk. It's not allowed to be another other type of milk. It can't contain even a trace amount of goat milk, sheep milk, camel milk, donkey milk, horse milk. And that's protection. So it's really Ramosha's traceability, that's there. There's verification, but even though other things are allowed, the labeling laws are the protection today. Because they make sure that even though there is such a thing as camel milk that's permissible and so forth to be sold commercially, but it's not allowed to be contained in any products because it says, unless it says specifically. So if it says milk, it means cow milk, and it's illegal to have any other milk in there. That's that. In addition to that, I've talked to various dairy inspectors, whether inspectors plus supervisors at the inspection agencies, state primarily, and federal a little bit, New York and Pennsylvania. They've assured me that even though it's true, technically, camel milk and so forth is permissible, if they were to see a camel being a camel in a milking parlor in a barn where they milk the cows, milk the animals, red flag would shoot up. It's something that is such a unusual, shocking thing. It doesn't exist. It would immediately cause for alarm. The reason is because, except for cow, goat, and sheep milk, other types of milk have a lot of contaminants. There are diseases that are carried by camels. And these diseases are prevalent in Saudi Arabia and the Arab countries where they have camel milk. So really, anything except for cow, goat, and sheep milk is going to throw red flags. It's not something that's, okay, another type of milk. No, it's something that is totally, like you're allowed to bring, they say it says in somewhere you're allowed to bring electronics. So, okay, I have a computer, I have a cell phone, I have a watch, and I have a machine gun. They wouldn't say, no, that's not electronics we're talking about. See, technically, red flags. Same thing here. So that's basically it. So by labeling laws and by the inspections, they know that the milk's not supposed to be this way. That's our protection. Now, I talked to Rebelski, I talked to Rav Schechter about the following. What about traveling to foreign countries? A lot of us travel overseas. Is the milk there considered to be chalav stam? Is it, according to Ramosha, is it permissible as well? You say the government inspections cover the milk. So the bottom line is that Canada and the European Union countries are fine. Iceland's not an EU country, but it's fine as well. These developed countries, they have dairy regulations, they're enforced, they're developed, they're adhered to, and so forth. The regulations are the same. Maybe even in EU, I told one of our mashgiachim there, I had mashgiach, it might even be better than the U.S. regulations, European Union, and the Western European countries. But either way, EU and Canada are fine. I spoke also to the chief rabbi of Kiev and of Moscow. I got letters from them about the milk. The milk regulator, I showed them to Rebelski and Schechter. They said they accepted. They said they were fine as well. There's one opinion, actually. There's one... One rabbi in Eretz Yisrael, he had the idea that any place that has regulations, that milk is permissible because the Talmudic decree was only about the Wild West, in which there's milk is not regulated, and therefore maybe the milk is coming from non-kosher animals, maybe it's mixed in. But anything that has a regulation is fine. The Rebelski and Schechter did not accept that at all. They said no, it has to be enforced. If there's a country in which there are in which regulations are very weak, or there's a lot of corruption and bribery in the dairy, nobody takes it seriously. That's not good. And that's the reason that even though every country has their regulations, there are a lot of third world countries in which, if you can look in the news or Google it, you'll see there's so much adulteration, so much contaminant going into their milk. The milk sometimes has soap in it, has acids in it, is watered down, it's water in it, all types of things. It's against their rules, but there's so much corruption and bribery and lack of enforcement. It's just a joke. And that's the reason that there are a lot of countries, third world in particular, in which one travels there, one should be wary. One should not drink the milk unless one has verified with a reliable kosher agency the milk is refined. Japan actually, it's a developed country, the milk in Japan is qualifies for chalav stam, or Ramosha, it's fine. Also, we're only talking about milk, we're only talking about regular, we call white, regular non-flavored milk. Milk that has flavors like chocolate milk or other dairy products, ice cream, yogurt, butter, whatever, these all require a hechsher. We're talking about just drinking refrigerated milk. All they do is they just pasteurize, they heat it to kill the bacteria, they add vitamin A and D, and that's all that goes on there. And vitamin A and D, even if they wouldn't be kosher, we wouldn't certify them, but they're nullified. The amount they put in is minuscule. They're not going to make the milk non-kosher. So if one were to go to a place and there's no milk with an OU or an OK, whatever it is on it, somewhere in America in a distant area, or goes to Denmark or wherever it's going to be, they can buy the regular refrigerated milk. You should know also, milk that is long shelf life milk, not the refrigerated milk, but the milk they have in Europe is more common. Like in the milk boxes, they have, you know, these, there you don't have to refrigerate them. Once you open that to refrigerate them, but they can last for months or maybe even up to a year or more on a shelf without refrigeration. These milks very often are not made in dairy plants. Very often they're made, see, dairy plants usually, they're just milk plants. All they do mostly is milk, and they make refrigerated bottled milk, and that's, you know, it's very straightforward. But we check to make sure the vitamins are good, make sure nothing else is going on there. If there are any chocolate milks made with OU, we make sure that the chocolate flavors are kosher and so forth. But these long shelf-like milk, they're called aseptic products, or UHT, ultra-high temperature pasteurization. These milks, they're often made not in dairies. They're very, very often made by companies that are called co-pack, contract pack companies. A company will say, we have equipment that makes long shelf-life stuff, very expensive, valuable equipment, and we're open to everybody. Soup companies send us their work to do. Juice companies send us their work to do. Very often you'll have, you know, all these companies make clam juice on the same equipment, hot equipment, and non-kosher grape juice, and all types of stuff, and chicken broth. All types of stuff on the same equipment as they make these milk boxes. These milk boxes are not refrigerated. Don't buy them even in America without a good hechsher on them. As I mentioned, not everyone agrees to Rav Moshe, to this idea of Chalav Stam. It's a machlokas. Those who don't agree, at least today, the reason they don't agree with it is they're not questioning, saying, oh, the dairy industry is not regulated well. We think it's not regulated well. We think that it's just a joke. We think that anybody can go ahead and put camel milk in the milk and it's all fine. Nobody said such a thing today. In the old days, regulation wasn't as good, so maybe if one would have said so, fine. But today, though, regulation is very good. So why today doesn't everybody do this? Why do people buy Chol of Israel milk, milk that is made at a farm which there are rabbis watching the milking at the farm? Like, why they take the word of the Gemara literally? Why is that? That is the answer, because they will say, the main answer is that they say that Gemara says, the Mishnah we read says, Yisrael Roehu, a Jew has to observe, has to witness the milking. It doesn't mean that we happen to know from circumstances the milking is good. It doesn't mean that we know the regulations. It means that a Jew is physically present to witness the milking, whether he's witnessing it or whether he's physically present and can witness it. But the physical presence of the Jew is what Chazal, what the Talmudic rabbi is required for milk to be acceptable as kosher. If he's not physically there, you can have all the information you want in the world, but it's not going to help. It's not there. You cannot fulfill the Talmudic requirement. It doesn't help. And that's the reason for that. Maybe we'll wait for a question at the end if it's okay with you. I'm sorry. We'll leave 15 minutes. Okay, hold on. Just quickly. Okay. There is today a... I'll just go into a few quick things. There is today something called robotic farming. It's catching on in America. It's in Europe. It's all over the place in Europe. And what it is as follows. The way that farming is done to a cow farm, you know, milk farms, dairy farms, operate today in America. I've been to a lot of farms. I don't know if you have, but it's interesting. Hold your breath often, but it's interesting to go there. The smell is terrible. But in the milk farms, you know, they have every 6 hours or so, they have a new shift. The cows in the milking parlor, in the milking room, they're milked, they go out, another group of however many, 50, 100 cows come in, they put the machines onto their udders, they're milked, they go out, it's rotating, another comes in, they take a rest, it's a rotating thing, every certain number of hours, 6 hours, whatever it is, the farmers have to come in, the workers, and put the suction cups on the udders, or it's electronic, they don't have to pull the udder electronically, but they have to manually put them on there. Robotic farms aren't this way. Robotic farms are amazing. You don't have people attaching things to udders and pushing the cow, leading the cows in, escorting them out of the milking parlor. They do as follows. They have a robot. They have a trough. It's a feeding area, a few of them, a number of them. And every cow is marked with a chip. And the feeding, the trough has a scanner on it. And every time the cows are hungry, they walk over to the trough, the feeding area. They put their heads down, then down, whatever. And the chip on them gets scanned by the scanner, and suction cups that are tailored to the exact specifics of that cow will shoot up and milk the cow as much as it needs to be milked, as much as comes out, whatever. And then when it finishes eating, it walks away, and that's it. And more cows will come, and the same will happen. And while they're being milked, by the way, they're also are tested. They have things that come shoot up also to test them, test their protein levels and their health and their blood. All types of medical tests are done to them. It's an amazing thing. And it requires almost no workers. You don't have to have workers, a bunch of workers putting suction cups on every 6 hours and moving around. It works robotically. It's beautiful. So for those who certify Chol of Israel products, how do you deal with a robotic farm? Normally, Chol Yisrael means that the rabbi has to be there. He doesn't have to be watching every second, but he has to be the shach, one of the great commentaries says he has to be yotzev nechnas, going in and out. So Mashiach has to be around, popping in and out during the milking. He has to be the beginning of the milking. He has to be there at least part during the milking, the end of the milking. He has to be around. Robotic farms, how do you do that? There is, the milking goes on and on. It goes on for days, weeks, years. There's no, they clean the equipment, but there's no stop to the milking. We said the cat milking, no more milking now. We're going to milk them later. It's constantly happening. So one kosher agency one time came to the OU and said, oh, we're going to certify a chavis roh with no mashgichim there, because we know that it's all good. So the OU's post tomorrow, or the Belsier sector, they didn't accept it. They said, no, you have to, even if you know that the milk is coming from these cows, the concern is, maybe there, in theory, maybe there's, you know, into the milk containers there, that's holding the milk that's been milked, maybe they can add other milk. Who knows? It's, you have to have surveillance on it. So the way it's done today, basically, is that the mashgiach will be there. If they want to serve a Chol Yisrael, a special kosher, you know, supervise, whatever, run of this milk, they'll stop the system, they'll clean it out, have a mashgiach there, and they say, now we're starting the milking. The milking will start and go on and on and on for days or weeks, however long they want it to have this Chol Yisrael production, and the mashgiachim will pop in and out occasionally during the run. They'll just cop out, see your only cows are here, and that's it. And at the end, they say, we're going to finish the run, we're going to seal off all the milk that's been milked, and that's it. That's how it's worked today. There is also, and I'll stop with this maybe, this last thing. There's also an issue today, a very popular, disputed, but whether or not Chol Yisrael can be certified via video surveillance. Let's say you put video cameras in the milking barns, you say. Therefore, instead of having a rabbi watching the milking, standing there watching the milking, and living in an apartment on the farm, and it's uncomfortable, it's remote from any Jewish communities, we'll put video cameras in there. We'll have the camera and watch the cows being milked. We'll see there are only cows being milked, and that's good enough. Some poskim, some halachos permit this. They say it's fine because as long as you have enough cameras to cover everything, it's fine. As you can see, it's even better than mashgiach. Maybe someone will fall asleep. Maybe you have to go to daven mincha. You can, who knows? And they know he's not there. Here, they can watch any second from the kosher agency's office. So they can watch every second what's going on. And some say no. Some say number one, you have to have a mashgiach live there. Mashgiach must be there. That's what Chazal, the rabbis, enacted. You must have a mashgiach there. And they also say that who is to say that, you know, there's so many different ways you can access the milk. Who's to say that? So maybe the cameras are watching the milking, the cows being milked. But later on, after the cows are milked, they're going to take the milk, they're going to move it to another area, they're going to move it to a larger silo. You have to have surveillance in every single area until the milk is sealed by the Mashiach. It's impossible to get such surveillance. It's very hard to. It's not reliable. So that's that dispute. Before we take questions, anything else from Cohen that you think that I failed to include? Okay. I guess we'll open up for questions, whoever has questions. I think he left. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Let's say a person's an airport lounge or mm-hmm. vending machine situation, and they have a machine with black coffee, assuming that's okay in its own right, but you can also have an option of adding milk in.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fresh milk, obviously, but what are the concerns that would...
So are you in... It depends on which airport your lounge you're in. If you're in an airport lounge in the U.S., then... I don't want to take responsibility for misleading people. Then in New York, it will probably be fine as long as it's milk, as long as it's not half and half or cream. Half and half and cream are kosher sensitive, but as long as it's just regular milk and it's in the U.S., then it probably is fine. I think it's worthwhile to asking somebody there really have to see the milk container. Even if you don't see a hechsher on, if you see it's a regular refrigerated milk container, that should be fine. But I think it's worthwhile to ask. Probably it's going to be okay without asking, but I think it's proper to ask just to make sure that it's just milk and it's not something else into it. A long shelf like milk, which can have be made in non-kosher equipment.
So what are you looking for to find out from the person that would probably it's a long shelf like?
You want to make sure it's a regular refrigerated milk made in America, as opposed to a powder. It probably wouldn't powder in a lounge, but it could be long shelf life milk. Maybe they leave it out for a long time. In the stores, that's not the new norm, I don't think. But just in case, in the airports, they get stuff from overseas. Make sure it's a domestic American milk. Make sure that it's not a long shelf life milk. Just make sure that it's milk. I'm sure it is, but sometimes companies sell half and half and creamers. They have a lot of other attitudes that are kosher sensitive, and one shouldn't ever use half and half or creamers without a good hechsher. Rabbi Cohen, I'm sorry.
What is powdered milk, and is there any difference in halacha?
Oh, great question. So powdered milk is milk that is powdered. Sorry, look at the. I'm not trying to make a joke. Apologize. I'm not trying to be. I'm sorry. It's milk that has been put through a spray dryer. A spray dryer is a large chamber, multi-chamber piece of equipment, large, usually several stories tall, and the liquid milk goes into the spray dryer, into what's called the cyclones of the dryer, and you look at these large, like funnel-shaped type of things, whatever it is, cones, and the milk goes in. Any liquid can go through the spray dryer, and it goes in, and as it goes down, hot air, oven hot air, at like 500 degrees or more, up to 1,000, is shot through the chamber, and it turns the milk into powder. That's what powder milk is. I apologize. That's what powder milk is. So powder milk does have a cost concern in general, because the reason is because powder milk very often is not made by dairies. Some dairies do. They have, we make milk, and we make milk powder. And we just use our spray dryer to dry milk. Some companies, I have deal with companies, they're not dairies, and they spray dry milk. They also spray dry shark oil on the same equipment, and chicken broth on the same equipment, and all types of stuff. So powder milk, definitely, because of the equipment it can be made on, is a cautious concern.
Is it okay to drink a cup of coffee in Starbucks with milk and coffee?
Okay, so regular, you were very, very compartmentalized, so I don't deal with coffee, but I can tell you best thing is to call the OU or something like that. To call the Kosher's hotline. I'll give you the number afterwards. I'm not a coffee drinker either, so I never really had to look into it for myself. Is that the regular standing urn, not ordering it from the counter, standing urn, wherever it's Starbucks, whether it's a gas station, whatever it is, a truck stop, whatever it is, that should as long as it's black coffee, that should be okay. The milk is probably fine as well, but it's worthwhile just seeing the milk container if you're able to.
If there is a lot of regulation and barcodes and testing,
mm-hmm.
then what's the difference between the robotic farming and regular farming if things are being tested anyway?
Oh, so robotic farming, here's the thing. Robotic farming is only at the actual farm itself. Once the milk leaves the farm, then it has to travel to the dairy. It has to be processed there, and therefore the dairy still has to be inspected to make sure it's only getting milk from approved robotic farms that are only cow farms and so forth. That's going to be the difference. Robotic farming simply is the only benefit really would be for whole of Israel milk, but really for other purposes, the robotic farm doesn't make a difference. Financially, it's a great benefit, but in terms of general kosher concern, it's not going to help us so much.
So if powdered milk has more kosher concerns,
mm-hmm.
how come some people are more lenient?
Oh, great question. Great question. There's a famous machlok, a famous dispute. Tzvi Pesach Frank, the Har Tzvi, who's the chief rabbi of Jerusalem, and the Chazon Ish, the great posuk of Bnei Brak. They had the following dispute. When powdered milk, is powdered milk, if you keep Chol Yisrael, can you drink non-Chol Yisrael powdered milk? That's the dispute. So Tzvi Pesach Frank brings cases. He says these are proofs from other situations in which other products that are not liquid milk, those are not a halachic concern, he says. The Gemara talks about other things. For instance, talks about cheese. Okay, that's a very complicated subject. I can't get into the details of it. There are proofs back and forth, but he says basically products other than actual liquid milk, the rabbis never decreed a problem, and therefore there's no such thing as having to make sure it's halachic Israel. They only decreed it on milk, liquid milk. I think powdered milk, other products, he says, they did not decree this on the first day. Hazon Ish said no. He said that the products they didn't decree it on, they might not decree it on, such as butter and cheese, are products in which you can't make them from non-kosher animals. If you try to make cheese, a hard cheese, from non-kosher animal, it's very hard to do. It doesn't usually form. Or butter, because of the fat distribution, you can't make butter from camels, whatever it is. That's the reason that Chazal didn't decree on these products. But milk, you can spray dry. You can just turn it into a powder. Any liquid can be turned into a powder. Therefore, he says there's no proof from the heart sleeve. That's the reason. He himself held that only on liquid milk did Chazal decree this problem, this gezeira. Sure.
Would you still be scared that the milk would be contaminated at the company? Like nowadays, if a company has to deal with FDA, like whose hands are paying the OU, they can sue for the cleaning up.
100%.
Oh
yeah, they agree that practically, if you ask the Chol Yisrael people, they'll say, I myself don't drink it, but they'll say, practically, 100%, I agree with you, I investigated the dairy industry very well. I know that it's cow milk. I have no question about that. But they will say that there are many post dairy authorities say that no matter how much you know it's good, Chazal required they have to have a mashgiach sitting at the farm. That's the rule. We have other halachic cases like this in which Chazal required a certain thing. I know that this is not a kind of concern, or I know that I've it's just as good as if I did it. We say no. They decree this has to be done. This is the format. This is the requirement. Having mashgiach there at the farm, and therefore, therefore that is just a requirement they instituted that can't be revoked. That's the other opinion. Yeah, how do you interpret the Gemara? That's today. In the old days, there was concern how well it was enforced. It might have been concern, but today it just comes down to the Gemara. How do you interpret the Gemara? Is it a rule that you must have fulfilled this physical mandate, or no? You have to have the virtual equivalent of it, but it's not a physical thing. No, please, I'm sorry.
So, if according to the sheet of the OU, that all this milk actually is Chalav Yisrael, how come they don't call it Chalav Yisrael?
They don't call that because those who want traditional Chalav Yisrael, they don't accept this Chalav Yisrael, so it would be misleading for them. It would be misleading for them to say that. Now, even Ramosha himself recommended, at least for Bali Nefesh, people who are on a higher level, or for chinuch purposes, for yeshivas, he recommended serving Chalav Yisrael there as well. He thought it was an important thing. So there is such a distinction as the basics and the Inukur Ramosha, and he himself drank only Chalav Yisrael. His family, he served Chalav Yisrael in his family, but he himself was personally strict about it. So there is such a distinction, that reason, plus also people being misled, because a lot of people considered the Chalav Yisrael, they say we wouldn't accept our kosher, so we can't. How dare you call that? You're misleading us. So that's why they just put no UD, and that suffices.
But those people that are being extra vocative, wouldn't they already know like this whole conversation, which is what then like gets rid of the whole concept of misleading them?
Well, they wouldn't because they want to make sure that Chalav Yisrael, the traditional Chalav Yisrael, the rabbi and mashiach at the farm, and if everyone has the right to write Chalav Yisrael based upon their understanding, like Ramosha. And then they're going to say, well, I can't buy anything now because everything I buy is a Chalav Yisrael, but it's not the Chalav Yisrael that I want. It's not my interpretation of it. So it wouldn't be fair to them.
Like, don't they only buy according to their BAM anyways? So like, why?
Right.
So
right.
Then anything that would be OU, like if it would be OU, then they wouldn't be buying from it anyways. So then
right,
like, why is there?
Right.
And that's like the entire group of people.
Well, they'll buy OU. Like, we do serve a Chalav Yisrael. We certify Mahadran Yogurt's Chalav Yisrael. We certify J&J, which is Chalav Yisrael. We certify a lot of Tznuva Chalav Yisrael. So we do certify Chalav Yisrael as well, a lot of OU products. Not the majority, but a nice minority of them. So that's the reason why. Because they will buy OU that is Chalav Yisrael.
Obviously, in the time of the Gemara, there was no such thing as seeing something that you weren't at, which would obviously be the difference between a Mashgiach being somewhere versus cameras.
Right.
So Chazal wouldn't have been able to talk about seeing something like
sure,
camera,
sure, sure.
Which I assume is probably some of the reason why some of
yeah, yeah.
Can say that it's allowed. But to say that, I feel like to say that Chazal spoke about someone seeing it, so therefore someone has to be there, someone seeing over camera would by definition being someone seeing as well, which does fit into the lesson of the Gemara.
The only thing Gemara, I see you're saying, but the Gemara though talks about the Israel, about the Jew being there and being able to see over the fence, or being able to see it. If he stands up, he can see the milk and not. So therefore, the Gemara, the simple reading of the Gemara, that's what Poskim say, is it's talking about physical presence. Not even though it's true, you can see something from with binoculars, like, you know, or obviously video much further away, but they mean physical, close physical proximity. That's how they interpret it. Oh, they're bringing it back, actually. They're bringing it back. I'm not sure why. They got rid of it before my time there, and it was confusing to me as to why. They thought consumers would be confused, but I think the consumers were more angry than confused, so they decided to bring it back. But it's. Yeah, another way to learn Gemara. I mean, it was prevalent. It was common that a lot of people were buying. It's probably based on that understanding. They were buying the whole of Stam milk, the regular non-Chalav milk, probably because they knew that the rabbis were buying it, and everyone does it. It must be fine. Whatever it is, but he genuinely, like any normal post situation, he believed this is the truth. This is the interpretation of it. And he mentions it over and over. There are three tshuvas in the first part of in Chelik Aleph of Yoredeah. He mentions it again in Chelik Beis, the Chelik Gimel. He mentions this throughout. So that's he definitely held that this is the bottom line, the permissibility.
What do you know about Central American and South American countries like for milk?
Oh, each one has to be really looked into. I don't myself know. I I apologize. I don't deal with it myself, but each recipe looks into it. The best thing is probably to ask the local rabbi. The rabbis, whoever ones that are more authoritative there that you think are the ones, the most knowledgeable are the ones to ask.
With regards to coffee made creamer,
mm-hmm.
it says non-dairy.
Oh, great question. Okay.
It also says less than 2% of a milk derivative.
Yeah, yeah. I'll explain what that is. Yeah, make sure time is good. Yeah, I'll explain that. As follows. They're very confusing. Yeah, I'll just explain the question a little bit for those who aren't privy to this to these things. A lot of creamers, coffee made, other creamers as well. Actually, it'll say non-dairy creamer, and it'll say OUD or OKD, and in the ingredients it'll say contains caseinate, a milk derivative. So what in the world? How can they're saying it's dairy? We're saying it's dairy, but they're saying it's non-dairy. It makes no sense. What's going on? So is the answer as follows. This is total politics. It's nothing to do with nutrition or food or kashrus. It's politics. Kashrus, it's dairy. Sometimes the amount of dairy is small. Sometimes the amount of dairy is not small, and it's not nullified, and it's fully dairy. But it's fully dairy. Caseinate comes from milk protein. The main protein in milk is called casein, C-A-S-E-I-N, casein. That's the main protein. That's what makes milk white, casein protein. And if the casein protein, though, it's used in a lot of products, but it's not soluble. You can't mix it with liquids. It won't mix in properly. It won't blend in. So you turn into a salt. You make through adding certain things to it. You make it a salt. Caseinate is a salt version, basically, of casein. It's casein. It's pure milk protein with the white milk, and that's what it is. So why is it? And the companies use it. They use it as a nutrient. They use it as a filler. Why is it called non-dairy? Here's the reason. Casein. It's basically not made in the United States, not made in America. It's made in Europe, it's made in India, it's made in New Zealand, it's made in Australia. Not made in America. And casein, it's milk protein, it's a nutrient. Casein is the main competitor in the U.S. to milk powder, powdered milk that we talked about before. Powdered milk is similar. Powdered milk has more things in it than casein, but powdered milk is the U.S. version of this nutrient filler dairy stuff, powder you can stick into things and make it whatever. So the U.S. dairy lobby is very strong. The casein coming from overseas and out of the U.S., they don't want it coming in. They don't want it coming into the country. They don't want it being used. It takes away consumers from domestic U.S. milk powder. So they got the U.S. government to require that anything containing casein or caseinate be labeled non-dairy, which means it's not real dairy. It's artificial. It's not the real authentic dairy stuff. It is dairy. It's chalav d'oraisa. It is milk protein. It is biblically milk. But for political reasons, the U.S. dairy law protects themselves. They got the government to say, in the old days, I remember, not so long ago, actually, it didn't even have to say a milk derivative. It simply said caseinate. Now people pushed the other way, pushed back and says, at least say it's a milk product, a milk derivative. People who are allergic to milk and so forth. So they do that now, but they call it non-dairy because of the political reason. The U.S. dairy lobby, that's the only reason. It's fully milky. It's more milky than most dairy products because it's pure protein.
100% dairy?
Yeah, caseinate is. And they add caseinate to creamers. The creamers, they certainly contain dairy, and sometimes it's nullified. Sometimes it's 1/60th. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's more than 1/60th. So that's why one should definitely treat these creamers as fully dairy unless one has verified otherwise that the amount of casein is so low, in which case it's nullified. Even then, I don't want to mess around with it. But, you know, please.
Thank you for coming. I have two quick questions.
Yeah, please.
One, you mentioned that there would be some time where we may get some milk, whatever, there's no hampshire on it.
Mm-hmm.
We would still not be able to see the qualifications, and then it could still possibly be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't the milk be hampshire?
Oh, for the company, very often those milks are made by companies that the milk itself inherently doesn't need, in U.S. domestic milk doesn't need a hampshire inherently because the vitamins are going to be butchered, they're nullified. They're normally in kosher. If they're not kosher, they're nullified. The milk is cow milk, and it's made on equipment usually dedicated just to milk. There are a lot of details about that. But companies get a hampshire for milk really two reasons. Due to marketing, they want people to say, oh, this is the kosher one, come buy this. Because kashrus is very cheap. It costs so little to get certified kosher-wise, much less than paying for one ad in a national magazine or a daily newspaper one time. A whole year of certification is so cheap compared to any other marketing. So for them to get the OU on or the OK, whatever it's going to be, is a very good business move for them, number one. Number two is that a lot of these companies that have milk with a hechsher on it, they make other things as well. Usually on other equipment. A lot of them all in the same facility will make butter there, they'll make cottage cheese, cream cheese, they'll make other beverages, and those need certification. So while we're there anyway, we don't charge by product. If we're going there to certify their butter and their cottage cheese and stuff, and they make regular milk, we'll say, we'll certify the milk as well. We're bitter anyway, it doesn't cost us more. We're paying your hechsher anyway, so we'll throw in the milk. That's usually why. But it's not, but by, and these companies, though, therefore, that don't have a hechsher, usually it's a milk plant that doesn't is in an area that's not servicing Orthodox Jews, and they don't make anything that does require a hechsher, and therefore they say, okay, we don't. It doesn't need it. Doesn't need or need it. It's like saying like a dairy and bar park, but they want halal. They don't know need halal. As an example, it's just it's irrelevant for them.
Thank you. And also the second question.
Oh, sure.
How far do we extend it, which, and just generally, the idea of trusting the government? Like, I was one time getting ice cream with someone. They didn't have a hechsher.
Good. Good for you. You did the right thing.
The other one was saying, oh, no, it's fine because they say this, this, and this on the product branding. So then, therefore, those are the only concerns there would be, and government regulations would not do that. Like, how, just generally, how far do we know when to extend and when, you know, to be a little more reserved?
Good question, good question. Yeah, so basically, just go back to what we started off with. In the case of Chol of Israel, say, or Chol of Stam, domestic regular milk, non-Chol of Israel milk, there we're not really trusting the government. We're saying that the way it works is we're saying that we know that they inspect it. We know they inspect it well. We're not saying we take their word for it. But since we know it's inspected well, and it is, you can look in the books, read the journals about it, the videos on it. Therefore, we know ourselves. Like, we're witnessing the milking. We see the milking. We know what's going on ourselves. So that's the thing. So government inspections, one generally should not be relied upon. I'll give you an example. Say an ice cream. Ice cream, every ice cream contains a lot of sensitive ingredients. It's impossible to make ice cream that doesn't have very sensitive ingredients. Even the cream is sensitive. Flavors, there's stabilizers that enable the emulsifiers, enable the things to mesh together. There's so many sensitive ingredients. You can add in animal parts. It's not usually, but it very well can. So ice cream, for instance, so say that would be an example which, no matter what, the complexity, you can't rely upon. But say, let's say that you see the ingredients. Because first of all, the equipment concerns are. Let's say the ingredients are only, you see two ingredients that things made out of, and that's all there are. But a lot of the time, a lot of ingredients are permissible to contain subcomponents, which are important subcomponents that can be flavorants that are not nullified, things like that, or emulsifiers, things that give form to it that are not butyl, that cannot be nullified, and those are not required to be declared. They're sub-ingredients. I'll give you an example. There's sometimes there are flavors, and the flavor might contain, wait to go in a second, might contain a little bit of milk in it, because milk, if you add milk to a flavor, like a berry flavor, it gives a smoothness of mouthfeel. It feels smoother and feels creamier, and so forth. The milk is not a separate ingredient, it's part of the flavor, a subcomponent of the flavor, of a berry flavor. So you can have berry flavor, and it will not say milk in the ingredients, but it really might contain milk in that flavor. And that milk may do a very important function. It might not be nullified. So that's an example. Sub-ingredients, it's a major, major concern. Maybe we'll make this as the last one, if you don't mind. Go ahead, please.
Has there ever been some sort of scandal in this whole milk process? And if there was, would that like change the law from anywhere?
Great question. Requires a whole other hour, but I'll try to do it in 30 seconds, I guess. Not to my knowledge, but I'll tell you what has happened, actually. This is actually helps. This is mechazik. This can reinforce. Those who drink Chol of Stam, this can reinforce their, or in general, reinforce the conviction of the thoroughness of it. There was a dairy. You can Google these things. I don't have all the details. There was a dairy, I remember, I think it was out in Colorado, and they were accused of, and the one also in Texas, they were accused of adding water to their, well, Colorado was accused of adding, of having conventional, which is non-organic milk. And organic dairy, they're accused of having non-organic milk. And they actually thought they were going to be shut down for good by the government for such a thing like that. Now, there's no proven, people are organic, but nobody's proven health benefit. There's no contaminants in non-organic. I mean, there might, there's certain, I don't go into details, but it's not something in which they say they clearly had a danger in that milk. They clearly had a, no. There's a case in Texas of a milk company, they're accused of adding water to their milk to dilute it. It happens all the time in Indian country. Like that. If you look at the news, it's terrible. But in the U.S., it doesn't happen. They were just suspected that. They thought they were going to shut down as well. And they didn't. It didn't happen, but they were suspected of it. That's how crazy, crazy sensitive this industry, the dairy industry is, and how they, and even though, if you look at the PMO, the pasteurized milk ordinance, it doesn't specify the fines. They used to specify fines in the old regulation, $500 for this, $1,000 for this, $20,000 for this. They don't even have that. They say reasonable, but they know that if any lack of trust, any monkey business, they used to call it, that would mean that's the end of them. So it hasn't happened kosher wise, but even the suspicion of it happening in non-kosher issues really was total fear, total panic. So if, for those drinking Chol of Stam, the regulations are solid. I couldn't expect anything better than this. Thank you all for listening, and thank you.
I think it's already